Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 319.
This week on the podcast, I was in the thick of the biggest news of the last 2 weeks.
And real talk, who's John Delaney?
Plus, partisan gerrymandering is no big deal if you have a lifetime appointment.
Plus, SCOTUS is super confusing these days, but ultimately still as horrible as you'd expect.
And we've been gone a month, so here are all the times we almost went to war.
Plus, Trump is celebrating the 4th of July by scheduling counter-programming to PBS's celebration. Because, hey, what better way to celebrate America than by getting better ratings than Carole King?
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey, guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Yeah.
And you can finally find us back on the podcast.
Woo, buddy.
We may or may not have promised that we would be writing newsletters when we didn't record.
You know what?
But we didn't.
If you have been listening to this podcast...
You know not to trust
us. ...and are
us.
Thinking that you should have taken our word on something, then that's on you.
I mean,
I don't know what to tell you.
This was an especially busy month for both of us.
Crazy.
I think maybe in the future we might be able to pull that off.
Yes.
But this month in particular was busy because I literally went and gave testimony to the House Judiciary Committee.
Yeah. Sorry, Lila didn't have time to work on something email to you while she was in Congress.
Yeah, it was... One of the most stressful things I've ever had to prepare for.
Yeah.
Even though everyone was like, just tell your story. Don't worry about it. I was
come on.
I have to tell it right there. It was actually, though, like not as stressful to be there as I thought it would be. I've spoken at press conferences and things like that.
Right.
And I don't always love doing that because that's very performative.
Yeah. But you're
you
good
know,
at
you're
it.
You know, you're talking to the press is like you have to put on a little bit of an act because you're like talking to nobody, essentially.
Sure.
And then they're not going to pick up my story anyway because there's always first responders that they would rather talk to.
Right.
So I'm mostly just speaking into a vacuum at a press conference and trying to seem exciting.
Yeah.
This was exciting because it was kind of cathartic. Like, I usually tell this story and nobody pays any attention to it. And I'm just like knocking my head against a wall, telling a sad story about kids getting essentially like poisoned
but
with toxic air after 9/11. And everyone's just like, but you're not heroes.
Right.
And this was kind of cathartic because even though I knew that the press wouldn't cover our story and I knew that, you know, I knew Jon Stewart was speaking at the same press conference. I'm sure that if you live in the world, you saw coverage
of that. I know. That's what I kept telling people. I was like, Lila was like 3 seats down from Jon Stewart.
Exactly.
Which, I mean, you know, it's not... Sorry about that.
Right.
But I mean, like, that's...
No.
You know,
But
then everybody was like, oh, cool.
That test... hearing went viral. So
it did.
It's not
totally
terrible.
I know.
But in the moment, in the room, the members of Congress that were there... I know he said no one was there, and that's true. But they were really engaged in my testimony.
Yeah, they
I
were.
Got more
you
questions
got more questions,
than anyone else.
And one of them said that you were, what was it, specifically compelling or particularly compelling or something like that?
I think that
one
was Madeline Dean.
Yes,
one of the freshman women.
Which is true because, like, I find, you know, you're right, you're not a hero, but I do, like, you're also, because, well, that sounded wrong, but you're not a hero. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean,
But, I mean,
I'm not
I think
law enforcement.
Because it's those people who are often focused on, that is why I think that you offer sort of like an interesting perspective if people are unfamiliar with it. Because, of course, when you sort of tell your story, it makes sense in the sense that, like, of course there were other people around other than the first responders because it's freaking Manhattan.
Exactly.
But, like, people don't think about it.
No, and it's never, you know, it gets covered a lot in local media in New York. It never gets covered outside of New York City. So people who represent areas outside of New York City have no reason that they would even know this unless they happen to get calls from people in their district. The chances that that happens to random Congress people, even if they do have survivors in their district, is pretty low.
Right.
And so I think in general, this was like new information to a lot of them.
Right.
And then on top of that, I was really the one who was there to make a case for why the bill needs to be extended for as long as it does. If you're not familiar with the legislation, this is a program that they keep refunding for 5 years at a time, but it's a compensation program for people who are going to be continuing to get sick forever.
Right.
And the youngest exposed were who I was there to talk about. And so I was really there to make a very specific point that made an important, you know, effect on
the
conversation.
Right, because you're trying... This attempt is to try to get it extended through, like, what is it,
2090
or something? Right, yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So, it was exciting. I ended up crashing a photo with Nancy Pelosi. Yes. So at least, fantastic. At least I did
you
that.
You got to be on Fox News.
I did. The next day, Fox News, interestingly, the only news channel that covered anything other than the responder story. I challenge other news networks to consider that angle.
Yeah, right.
Fox News offers good coverage on this one issue, or at least Shep Smith does.
It's the closest thing that they have to a journalist on that network.
That's right.
So, yeah.
2 days before that, he'd said people should read the Mueller report. Then he had Jon Stewart and John Feal on the next day. And then next day, he had me on.
Yeah.
And they had me just come on and talk about sort of like the community members that were there. And so I had to go to Fox News' DC studio and like get hair and makeup to do like a live via satellite interview.
Ask if you wanted fake eyelashes.
They sure did. there was some guy who's just like a roving pundit in the green room who I had a long conversation with about Lebanon. And then I was forced to watch the entirety of Trump's press conference with the Polish president.
You told me that you were going to be on, so I was at work. It was in the middle of the day,
so
but I pulled it up online, and then I was just sort of like, oh, well, I guess I'm watching Fox News.
Did you notice that in that, during that speech, because of
no,
where
I
the
didn't
sun,
listen to it. I had it on mute.
You didn't have to listen. I wasn't listening. Trump was backlit in the speech, and because of that, his eyebrows looked like they were illuminated.
Oh, yes.
He looked so weird.
You texted me that,
yes.
And then I went to go look, because I think
so
I had
bizarre.
It sort of on in the background.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So, in any case, though, it was an exciting month.
Well,
and we're
congratulations.
Back. Thanks.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just back to being a regular
person
in Hollywood now.
And then I followed. Then you went to New York City. And
then
Brent
followed me around for a while.
And then you went to San Francisco. And then I went to San Francisco.
That's right.
Right. So we've just been sort of like.
Brent's been following me
around
America.
We've been very important people lately.
Yeah.
Lila more so than me. I've only been important to people who watch Bravo.
Right. Well, that's some people.
You know.
It's people you know.
Right. Lila does important work, and I give people an escape from their everyday
That's
lives.
That's right. We all share in
we
the
have
importance.
Exactly.
We all offer something. But you also got to be at SF Pride for an exciting moment where protesters protesting Pride stopped the event, and they were gay protesters doing an ACT UP style protest to protest how corporate it had become.
And I know. Yeah.
I mean,
isn't that crazy?
We made it, you guys.
That's exactly what I said to Lila. I was like, well, we're protesting ourselves, so we did it.
Right.
That's
solved.
It. Yeah, I know. A lot of people on the march were really angry, and I was really angry because we had to stop for like an hour.
Well, sure.
So the parade took an excessive amount of time.
Yeah.
No, turns out it wasn't hot.
It wasn't.
It was fucking freezing.
What?
Because it's San Francisco.
It was so hot here. Oh, I'm so jealous.
Ugh,
I'm not.
It was
very unpleasant here this weekend.
I thought it was going to catch
frostbite. I came
back
from the East Coast where it had already been too humid, and I touched down here, and it was like, I almost got kidnapped on the way back from the airport. I made Brent stay up on New York time. I made him stay up till like 2 in the morning, like tracking my Uber because I was afraid I was being kidnapped.
Yeah, well, Lila's Uber driver texted her and asked her if she was alone. And when she said yes, he said, fantastic.
Right.
Turns out it's just because he didn't have any trunk space.
But he could have clarified that beforehand, you know? And then he also took a route that was, as you pointed out, the exact route someone would take if they were kidnapping you.
Oh, I know. When she, because
I was like in downtown LA all of a sudden.
Assumed that everything was going to be fine.
Sure.
And ultimately it was. But yeah, and then he started going in a way that that seemed like it was maybe like going to a secret warehouse somewhere opposed to
We were
your
heading
home.
To a warehouse district. Yeah, it was not a fun time.
Yeah,
but
it turns out there was just traffic on the 101 because of course there was.
Well, obviously, that's where you'd find it.
Right.
But yeah, it was an exciting adventure that ended in it being too hot.
Right.
Which is how we got there. In any case, we came to you today not to talk about me or Brent's travel plans.
Right.
We came here to talk about the Democratic debates.
Yeah.
I mean, we're finally getting back to our season. Because though we bring you this podcast year-round, we only really care about elections.
Right.
The rest of this is just a chance for us to air our angry thoughts about various policies that you might not care about. Election time is where our expertise really comes to play.
Yeah.
And this debate was unlike anything I've ever seen. It had shades of that one Republican debate in 2012. When we first started the podcast, they were doing Republican debates with like 100 people at them.
Yes.
The clown car debates, as I was calling them.
Mm-hmm.
And it did remind me a little bit of those. It had shades of those debates.
It totally did.
But they were less exciting because obviously Herman Cain wasn't here. You know, like Michelle Bachmann wasn't here.
Right.
Ben Carson did not make an appearance.
John Delaney was, though.
John Delaney was here, and he served some of that.
Marianne Williamson was.
That's true.
Ooh, buddy.
And that, I wish they had an undercard debate.
Well,
so that we could have seen that glory.
I'm wondering if maybe that's what they should do the next time.
I think they should.
Because they're catching some flack for how hard it's going to be to get into the next debates, because they're at the end of July, and I think as it stands right now, something like 7 would qualify, which is a much more reasonable number for a debate.
Right, but then should the networks be deciding who we can and can't see aired, you know, in this early in the cycle? Let's put everyone on TV. Right.
Right.
Before we begin our in-depth coverage, though, we're going to do some yearbook-style superlatives.
Sure.
To get us started.
Yeah.
Well, first we can... So I don't find talking about who wins a debate all that helpful of a thing to
reference. Well, especially in these.
Because who can win a debate of over two nights with 20 participants?
Well, that's what I was going to say. If you have a debate amongst two people, or three,
you
or
can
even
speculate.
Four, or five, or seven,
right,
then you can sort of have that debate. But
you can have
I agree.
Debates about who had the best night versus the worst night. You can't win a debate where everyone was just talking about their ideas.
No.
There's no winning there.
Right.
You can lose that debate. Joe Biden lost the debate.
He did.
But he didn't.
Yes.
No one.
Beto O'Rourke, I think,
Beto
also
O'Rourke
lost
the debate.
Yes.
Thank God. If you want to use the measure of winners, I think the first night there was sort of like some consensus around the idea that Liz Warren is already sort of surging, so she might have won. But Cory Booker and Julian Castro were the sort of other standouts.
I think
from
they
that
were
debate.
The sort of like, I think everyone was expecting her to do well, and she didn't do anything to ruin everything.
Yeah.
And I think that she probably knew that that was what she needed to do too. She was strong at the beginning in her opening statement and in a few sort of like initial responses that she got asked sort of more questions at the top, just because she was standing in the middle of
Well, she was the front runner
pack,
of the debate.
And she was the front runner of that debate. She went a little silent, which some people were
see her get angry at the moderators? Because that whole immigration debate, she had actually spent the day at a detention center that day.
Oh, yeah.
And they didn't ask her, they didn't let her talk during the immigration debate. She motioned that she had a comment and they moved on and saw her motion and just moved on anyway.
Right.
So in the middle of the debate, she got kind of angry.
Yeah. And then she brought it back home again at the end. She had a great closing statement. Yeah. And so she did.
But she's also not someone who I think needs to surge in the debates, because she's slow and steady just winning people
over.
That's
what I was going to say. She did exactly what she needed to. I don't think it was a problem that she was had some moments of silence, because that was okay.
Right. The winner of the second debate was unequivocally Harris. Kamala Harris won it by a mile.
Without question.
And we're going to talk more about why, but we're first going to do our superlatives.
Yes.
That's what we came for.
Yes.
Okay. In the Spanish category.
Yes. Best Spanish.
Best Spanish. Julian Castro. I think we can all
His accent was the best, but it should be pointed out,
he's not a native Spanish speaker.
That he is not fluent in Spanish.
No.
He is not speaking Spanish on that stage because he's just a man who can go around speaking Spanish.
No one on that stage was a person who's doing that.
You might, you know, incorrectly think that he can, just due to the fact that was the only Latino on the stage.
Right.
But he does not speak Spanish.
But given the competition, he really was head and shoulders above the rest.
Right.
The worst Spanish goes unequivocally to Cory Booker, who should not have attempted Spanish in public.
Yeah. And like, you know,
enjoy a nice Spanish soap opera at home in the privacy of your home. If you want to work your way through a book in Spanish because you think it's good for your intellectual development, feel free.
I mean, you're doing this with French right now, but you wouldn't go out. You wouldn't have
given
your testimony.
I'm not going to speak it in a presidential debate. No. I'm not going to reference it in public whatsoever. I'm going to enjoy dumb television in French and read stupid books.
And had you spoken in French while you were in public,
I would have tried to answer the question.
You would have tried to answer the question, which brings us to our point about the most unnecessary Spanish.
That would be Beto O'Rourke. Beto O'Rourke
country mile.
Started this problem, we should point out, because it was his fault that everyone started speaking Spanish. And listen, I'm not against people speaking Spanish in the debate. I am against them using it to deflect from answering a question about top marginal tax rates, which is what he was doing.
Yes.
Answer the question in whatever language you want to, but answer the question.
And then
when they followed up, he wouldn't answer the question.
Oh, they followed up multiple times.
Yeah, because they'd asked him a straightforward question about top marginal tax rates. And at that time in the debate, the only person who was trying the strategy of just answering questions was Liz Warren. Everyone else was giving a nonsense speech about nothing. And Beto O'Rourke one-upped everyone by drawing so much attention to his lack of question answering, by insisting on answering with an unrelated Spanish sentence,
that
everyone was just like, no, guy,
you don't do this. Cory Booker, a man who probably planned to speak Spanish in this debate anyway, gave him a look of like, dude, no.
And then, you know
that.
What? Cory Booker can... I deserved that look himself.
Well, he did.
His Spanish was embarrassing.
Wasn't great.
It was an embarrassing moment for all of us.
Yeah.
Because if we're going to have a debate where everyone's just trying to one-up each other with their Spanish skills, no one who doesn't speak Spanish should have entered into that competition. And yet, here it was. The person with the best restraint from using unnecessary Spanish.
Yes.
Pete Buttigieg, a man who speaks like every language.
Right, and got asked a question in Spanish.
And immediately...
And responded quickly in Spanish.
Then
and
went
then
back.
Moved on.
That's right.
Yes.
Because he, like anyone who had seen the first debate, because he was at least the second night, knew where that might end if he went too far down the Spanish rabbit hole.
I love that Marianne Williamson tweeted on the night of that first debate that she needed to learn Spanish by 9 o'clock tomorrow night.
That was the only clever thing that she said for the entire... In any case, back to our superlatives. The worst personalizing of a universal issue.
Oh,
Joe Biden
God.
On healthcare. Runner-up, Michael Bennett. Here's something I have to say. If you find yourself beginning a sentence that's about to tell us why we can't have single-payer healthcare with the sentence, you know, this is personal to me, then go die in a well. Jump in a
They're the only people who have ever had a healthcare issue.
That's right. This is, like, we're not talking about an issue that is actually personal to people in the sense that it is not personal to other people, like race or gender or, you know, an issue that affects women's health. You might be justified in saying, you know, this issue is personal to me. An issue that affects, if you are Cory Booker and it's an issue that has to do with black men not being able to come home from police stops, that might be a time that you could say this issue is personal to me.
Sure.
If you are a human being with healthcare and you think it's important to qualify that for you, healthcare is important.
Right.
And you're about to use that to make a point about how,
not
you're,
how
you're willing...
Not everyone should have access to it.
You're willing to accept a plan in which people go uninsured and go without healthcare.
Yeah.
Then literally go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
In any case, I disqualified Joe Biden on the basis of that answer alone. And Michael Bennett, who's not relevant, so it doesn't matter, was a close runner-up because he did the same thing. And I was like, leave it to a bunch of out-of-touch, middle-aged, and old white guys to think that somehow the fact that they once had a healthcare issue in their family is somehow unique to their experience.
Right. That's a Republican answer. That's a lack of empathy answer.
That's right. If you can't imagine that... Everybody has had a sick family member, you guys. If you have had a family, which you, everyone was born from someone, then you have had a healthcare issue in your family. So, like, stop that.
Yeah.
Most embarrassing generic white person? Tim Ryan.
Right.
He had to be schooled by Tulsi Gabbard on whether or not the Iraq war, whether or not Al-Qaeda had caused, or Afghanistan had caused 9/11.
Right, yes. The Taliban.
The Taliban.
Right.
The runner-up to the most embarrassing generic white person is John Delaney, just because who the fuck is John Delaney? He talks so much.
He's a man who has way too much of his own money.
That's right.
Yeah.
He has a lot of money and not a lot of hair and a lot of red-faced...
My favorite.
A lot of rosacea.
One of my favorite moments of that first night was when he was trying to jump in about immigration, and he was like, I want to talk about this because my grandparents were separated from their family.
Right.
And then Lester Holt cut him off and said, we're going to talk about Iran now.
I know.
I was like, yes.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
every single one of his moments was like that, too, where it was just sort of like, oh, God, do we have to finish listening to John Delaney? And it turns out,
we didn't.
We don't.
No. You never have to listen to John Delaney.
Yeah.
The most California moment? When Marianne Williamson said that her plan for her first moment in office, her first day in office, was to call New Zealand. To say, hey, girl. Because I believe that was how it began. She wanted to call the Prime Minister of New Zealand to say, hey, girl.
Right.
And then something.
Right.
About
kids. To say that New Zealand isn't the best place to... It was also to be like a badass, too.
Yeah,
was,
she was going to
weird thing
one up to, the Prime Minister of New Zealand
about where
about
best...
what the greatest place to be a child is, which is unequivocally not America. I mean...
In Marianne Williamson's America, it is, though.
Well, in a magical America, it would be.
Yeah.
But I loved... The fact that she was even in that debate was kind of fascinating to me because I had expected all of my friends from outside of New York City to ask me who she was and me to be like, you don't know if you don't live in California. I get that. What I didn't expect was the number of people who live in the district she ran for Congress in who texted me to ask me who she was.
I know.
And I was like, she's been on your ballot before. There used to be signs everywhere for her.
I know.
What are you talking about?
I know.
That was amazing and just goes to show
well,
you.
Well, I think she got fourth place in that jungle primary.
Well, it wasn't one of the greatest showings of a person who believes magic can help them. The least California moment is every time Tim Ryan and Pete Buttigieg made a comment about how forgotten the Rust Belt is. And I have something to say about this. I'm going to try to keep it short, but I'm not going to probably do that. The only people who we ever campaign to in a presidential race are people in the Rust Belt. It's swing state voters. Tim Ryan is from Ohio. Can you think of a state besides Iowa, which is also in that region?
That we pander to more?
And New Hampshire, which is also a sort of working class state in that sense.
Sure.
Is there anyone we pander to more than fucking Ohio?
Right.
Do not get on stage.
Michigan, Iowa.
Like, the whole Rust Belt.
Right, uh-huh.
Do not get on stage.
Pennsylvania.
And tell me, a California and New York voter, who has never once had a presidential candidate ask them for their vote.
Right.
Ever. They've come to me with their hands out many times. They come to California and throw fundraisers, and they come to us for donations and whatever. We get all these calls to donate to their fucking bullshit. But they never come and say, hey, here's an issue that affects California. I care about that. Yeah. Here's my plan. You know, like, and I, listen, I know that there are economic troubles in the Midwest. And do you know why I know that? Because everyone is fucking moving here.
Well, right.
And there's a housing crisis here.
Right.
We have real problems on the coasts right now. This is, and we've moved up our primary specifically to address this problem.
Right.
And if I have to hear another red-faced asshole tell me that no one is paying enough attention to the one place that we talk about incessantly during the presidential race, where his constituents probably get to meet every presidential candidate. That's how important his area is to the presidential race. Have I ever met a presidential candidate in my life? Ever once? No, I can tell you the one time I saw a presidential candidate live, and it was for the 2 weeks that Jerry Brown ran for president in like 1992.
Right.
I have, and then I've been to Bernie Sanders rallies.
Right.
That's all I've done.
Yeah.
I've never seen any one of these fuckers come and tell me that my vote is important to them. I don't need to have them get on a debate stage and tell me that we're already being pandered to too much.
Right.
There are a lot of us here. The
yes.
coasts have a lot of people. That's why we talk about ourselves. California is the largest state in the union. We have the fifth biggest economy in the world.
Yeah.
We deserve to have people pander to us.
Yeah.
Our economy literally could destroy the rest of the American economy if it fell apart.
Yeah.
That's how important we are.
Right.
You should fucking pander to us. Don't tell me we don't talk to Ohio enough.
I know.
In any case, I got very mad about that.
Yeah.
And then I sent a lot of angry tweets that no one retweeted. And then I ranted to every single person I know via phone. So sorry to every person who listens to this podcast, because I've already called you personally to rant about this. But I just can't. Tim Ryan was the worst offender, but Pete Buttigieg did it as well. And I get it. That's part of his deal.
Some of the Colorado contingent did it as well, too.
I know. The Colorado contingent can also go fuck themselves.
Yeah.
I don't need ever, and I mean this ever, I don't ever want to hear anyone from a swing state tell me that they don't get enough attention during a presidential cycle. I don't want to hear that at all.
Yeah.
Like, I even asked Brent earlier, I was like, since you have moved to California, and Brent comes from a place where everyone gets to go to, like, a barbecue with every presidential candidate.
Yeah.
Has anyone ever asked you for your vote since you became a California resident?
No.
No. They've gone and talked to your family in Iowa, I'm sure, many times. I'm sure everyone, you know, when your parents were still living in Iowa, they were always taking fucking pictures with all the presidential candidates.
Yeah.
Like, this, but when you move to California, it's like you become a nobody in the presidential race, even though you are part of the fifth largest economy in the world.
Right. With an early primary.
With an early primary now. And also, real issues that have an effect on the lives of millions of people. Because the housing crisis here is not some elitist bullshit coastal issue.
No, I know.
It's a coastal issue because people want to be on the coasts.
Well,
but it's a crisis.
I just came from San Francisco, which is where Kamala Harris is from, and it would appear to the naked eye that every single person in San Francisco is homeless.
Yeah. And if you were within 12 miles of an underpass in LA, you would have the same opinion.
Right.
You know, so like, stop that with Tim Ryan and Pete Buttigieg. In any case, the most predictable candidate, Bernie Sanders, obviously. He stuck to his script and
he did.
He always sticks. I mean, that I could have recited Bernie Sanders part of that debate, and yet I wasn't bothered by it.
No,
he just does what
he
does.
I mean, I wasn't either, although I feel, and I felt like this even a couple times with Liz too, and maybe we'll get there because we're going to sort of like break these down a little bit further, but I feel like they... Yes, I agree with you that it's sort of like that's his thing and I'm here for it. And I always have been and I always will be, Sanders for life.
Right.
But like, I feel like there were some times where he had some opportunities that he missed, whether it be to go after some of the other candidates, or I think he was asked something like very specifically that I think he probably could have called some attention to some sort of, discrepancies in the wealth gap between white people and black people and
totally.
There were like where I think he got asked something specifically like seemed like it may have been designed for him to offer that up and he supposedly is trying to be better about that and I don't know and I didn't think you know
Liz Warren didn't have a good answer for gun control.
She didn't have a good she like study it like that's can't be it
well,
like I mean
I, also,
I know what she was
I feel,
going for
right
but,
I was
like,
gonna say I feel like the thing that she failed to add to that answer that would have changed the way that answer got perceived is that the Dickey Amendment prevents us from doing research on gun violence. And that is why she was saying we need to do the research, because we literally are barred from doing the research. If she had drawn a connection to that policy,
right.
I think that would have made it see, because that's when she said that, I was like, yeah, but then I was like, I guess people probably don't know that this is a thing, because
right.
I was watching the debate with other people and they were like, ugh, what is she talking about? And I was like, federal law prevents us from
right.
doing public health research on gun violence. We're not even allowed to do the research.
Right. Yeah.
That's why she's saying that, but she didn't say it.
She, right, exactly.
And she also, yeah. but that was the question that she got asked after all the technical difficulties too. So she had a lot of time to think about
That's
it, but it was
true.
Also a confusing time.
Right, it was, yeah.
So in any case, but Bernie Sanders just was himself
right.
as he's grumpy and he says the same thing no matter what you ask him, and you just have to,
right.
I feel like he's more there to keep everyone honest than he is to like right. really campaign for president. And
yeah.
you know, I'm here for it. Most unpredictable candidate, there were a lot of them, but I picked Jay Inslee because he was like the master of the like confident non sequitur.
Sure.
He got lauded early in the debate for, they had a question about healthcare, which everyone
yeah.
bungled. And that's when Joe Biden was going on about how personal healthcare is to him. And then they were about to move on and Jay Inslee raised his hand and he got in there and made a completely unrelated comment about a woman's right to choose that
right.
came out of nowhere.
Right.
And everyone online was like, yeah. And I was like, what is he saying right now?
Right.
Like, He's not answering a question. He's not responding to
right.
anyone. He just came out of nowhere with a talking point about a woman's right to choose.
Yeah.
And then it,
which
it
gave
handed
Amy
Klobuchar,
like her best moment of the debate, unless you count her talking about her uncle.
I don't.
Dickie's
I certainly don't.
Deer cabin or whatever the fuck it was she was talking about. I don't know. She certainly was like, all right, guys, I'm going to be folksy. And
yeah.
you're going to have to deal with it.
Yeah.
Because that's
And I chose not to deal with it. And that's why I feel
yeah.
that this was her best moment of the night and
right.
not that.
Yeah.
In any case, so those are the superlatives. Onto the real stuff. NBC
yeah.
had tech issues both nights
oh my God.
That were hilariously unprofessional, that
yeah.
were embarrassing for everyone.
They had to take a commercial break when the mics of the first hour's moderators
well,
were still on.
Why
and
were they changing moderators so
that
much?
That was weird.
There were already 10 candidates. We needed to have 5 moderators to moderate 10 candidates? It's ridiculous.
I know.
Why didn't they just let one set of moderators do one night and the other set do the other night?
I don't know.
The whole thing was absurd.
It was.
Because when they changed moderators, I was like, I'm going to have to learn the names of new people. Like, I immediately was frustrated.
Yeah.
Just because even though I already knew who they all were, it just seemed like too many new faces. I couldn't handle it after having to figure out who John Delaney was and how he was different than Jay Inslee and Tim Ryan, which
yeah.
took the whole first hour.
Right.
I just, like, didn't have room in my head for any more people.
Yeah.
Night one details. I have one minor rage detail that was...
This was a rage detail that I had, too.
Yeah.
I texted you guys immediately.
Yeah.
We had a text
chain. We were having
chain
a whole
Grant,
text chain about
been,
this.
You know, on here. And I was just like, oh, Cory Booker doesn't take money from Big Pharma?
He
like,
literally phrased it as like a lawyer would phrase
right.
it.
He said, after I announced, I was the first person to say that I wouldn't take any money from Big Pharma. And I texted you guys and I was like, that's because you already had enough money from them that you transferred over from your fucking Senate
that's right.
campaign.
If you,
this is a man who makes most of his money on the
he
heels
receives
of Big Pharma.
The most money of anyone in the Senate from Big Pharma. He is from a Big Pharma state.
Right.
If he is going to sit here and tell us that he's chosen not to take Big Pharma money while he is running a campaign currently funded by money he made from Big Pharma
yeah.
while he was running for Senate,
buzz
he
off.
Can literally go fuck himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
Like, that was so infuriating because
yeah.
I was just like, he didn't even have to say that.
Yeah.
He could have just not said anything.
Yeah.
He said it because he knew that people have concerns about it. But the worst thing to do if people have concerns about it is to outright fucking lie about it.
Yeah.
So in any case, we were immediately mad at Cory Booker.
Yeah.
That was, to me, a standout moment of rage that
right.
I carried with me for the rest of the night and
same.
Continued to
and
tweet about for days.
I was going
to
say, and I know it probably went unnoticed.
It did.
To most.
Yeah.
But
not, we're
going to
bring it back.
I was going to say,
we're gonna
make, we know.
We know, and I shared it with everyone.
Yeah. Same.
Julian Castro did great for someone who doesn't have a personality or any following.
Yeah, well, it was interesting because, like, and this is why, you know, we were talking about sort of, like, Liz being quiet for a little bit, but I think she sort of saw that, you know, sometimes hitting up at the front runner isn't necessarily the best strategy.
Yeah.
And Julian Castro, I think, had the best strategy.
Yeah.
Because he basically attacked sideways.
That's right.
And he attacked in state, which
mm-hmm.
was also probably
right,
smart.
Right, good idea.
But, you know, he went after
Beto.
O'Rourke specifically on... breaking up families at the border, which he doesn't think Beto has a great answer on because there's some specific part of the law that
Beto
you know Beto doesn't
want to
right exactly you know, And he seemed hapless in his response. I mean, he wasn't doing great up to that point anyway. But I mean, he, like, Julian Castro just, like, ended him.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
in a way,
really,
it was an impressive way. And it was a way that made him seem like a person who was in the debate, which he could have easily not been.
Right.
Because he's not known for his sparkling personality in these situations.
No, he's not.
He's someone who they've been trying to tout for years. You know, the Castro twins have, for years, the Democratic Party has been trying to make them the next Obamas, except they lack the charisma that Obama had.
Yeah.
They're, like, young and dynamic, but they have no charisma.
Right.
And so Julian Castro really, like, put on a show, like, unlike I've really ever seen him put on in having a, you know, in getting to attack the charisma guy.
Yeah.
Because Beto did not have any charisma.
Oh, no. Not at all.
He seemed like a nonsense
person. Yeah, and he's the charisma guy.
Yeah, he's the charisma guy. He's the Obama.
Right.
You know, he's the guy who can coast on his charisma. Yeah. And so Julian Castro, I feel like, really did himself some favors in the way that he came across. Because he seemed strong. He seemed like a real person, which some of these people were having trouble with.
Tim Ryan
specifically.
I think so too.
And Tim Ryan is somebody who is in Congress and is always trying to challenge Nancy Pelosi. So I don't know why he seemed so hapless.
Beto O'Rourke, honestly, is a person who, he was so bad. And he's a person who, and this is crazy, he has work to do to make the next debate.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
It's crazy, but it's also like, it was so clear he was out of his league.
I know.
That he's not going to get into the league.
No.
He's not going to find the league. You know,
also, you heard that here first.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah, you did hear that here first. We said that.
Been telling you for months since the day he announced
that he's out of his fucking league.
That this candidacy was garbage.
And we were right.
And we were right.
Because we always are.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Tim Ryan, we talked about the Tim Ryan and Tulsi Gabbard moment, but we didn't talk about it as it pertained to Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah.
Who had no real leg to stand on other than the fact that she went viral briefly because her sister tweeted from her account, "It's clear who MSNBC wants to be president, Elizabeth Warren."
Yeah.
They're giving her more time than all the other candidates combined. They aren't giving any time to Tulsi at all. And then signed it, V, Tulsi's sister.
Right.
So Tulsi Gabbard was having a weird night already. It did spike Google searches for her.
Yeah, and she was the most searched of night one.
Yeah, there were a few reasons. One was
nobody knows who she is. Anyway.
No one knows who she is. Two was she had that exchange with Tim Ryan that was embarrassing for him.
Yeah.
And it was really embarrassing that it came from a woman, given his whole thing.
Yeah.
And especially embarrassing that it was a woman veteran who had to school him in how to be a guy from Ohio.
Yeah. You certainly didn't leave that debate not knowing that she was in the military.
You did not.
Didn't leave the debate not knowing that Cory Booker lives in a bad neighborhood.
I mean, it was unavoidable.
If learned anything, it may have been those two things.
He managed to fit that in. Didn't matter what he was talking about. But so she had a sort of interesting night because I feel like she did have a standout moment. She's not going to be the president, and she was a single issue candidate, and she made that very clear.
Right.
But she had this hilarious Twitter controversy going on while she was schooling Tim Ryan in the war.
Yeah.
Which brings us to our final
observation. Well, this I think will lead into night two because I sort of felt like it was, upon further reflection, it was this reason that sort of led us to some of the chaos in night two, which was more chaotic. But there were a few moments in night one that actually played pretty well. Of people interjecting themselves into the conversation. Because, look, they had 60 seconds for a response, and then if someone's name was invoked, they had, like, 30 seconds for a rebuttal. It was supposed to be very nice and friendly. And for the most part, night one was that.
Right, which is a boring way to watch a debate.
Which is a boring way to watch a debate. And the few moments where that wasn't how it played out were some of the better moments. And a lot of them were brought to us by Bill de Blasio, who was on the end, and I think knowing that if he wanted to say literally anything, he was going to have to decide to say it.
Yeah.
It wasn't going to be because Lester Holt decided he wanted to hear from him.
No.
Because he didn't.
And he played the role of liberal attack dog in a way that A, prevented Warren from having to do it, but B, was like, I know, you know, there was controversy afterwards because he was doing a New Yorker thing and interrupting a lot, and some people were, like, scandalized by that, and I was, like, living for it.
But he came in
and made points that someone needed to fucking say.
Right.
You know, they're going on and on about all these sort of centrist to right-wing points about taxes, about healthcare, and he was the one who finally, after all of that had been going on, was like, you guys, We are Democrats. We are supposed to be in favor of high marginal tax rates.
Right.
We're supposed to be in favor of insuring every person.
Right.
We are supposed to be in favor of not mistreating fucking immigrants at our border. All of these things are things we're supposed to be in favor of. What the hell are you guys talking about?
Right.
And then he kind of went on in that vein.
Yeah.
For the rest of the night.
Yeah.
And it was kind of glorious.
It was great.
Him and Liz Warren were the only people that raised their hands when they were asked if anyone was in favor of abolishing right. private insurance.
They asked that on night two, and that
was a disaster.
Was a disaster. We'll
predictably, Bernie second, Sanders raised his hand unapologetically, obviously. But
Kamala Harris.
You might guess who had an apologetic
right.
answer to that. But de Blasio really kind of like, and I was forced to remember, listen, this is not a man who's going to be the president. However,
right.
I recall when he was running for mayor that he was like nobody until he was somebody. He is good at sort of sneaking himself into these moments. He was running in a mayoral primary against some very heavy hitters.
Yeah.
And he was like just some random guy. And then as they came down, he just sort of like slowly rose out of the ashes. And while I don't think this is going to be his fate in the presidential race,
this
strategy sort of reminded me that he's kind of like, listen, I don't know why he's running for president. And I don't particularly care. But it did remind me what he's good for.
Well, right. And because of the way that he was talking so broadly about what the party stands for, I sort of had a moment where I was like, is he maybe also running for DNC chair?
Yeah, I would believe. And I think that would actually be a smart move for him.
I do too.
I think it would be a smart move for all of us, actually.
All of us. Yeah. I would do a good job.
Yeah. But so, in any case, that was fun. And then that leads us to night two when all hell broke loose.
Right. Because this started off chaotic and didn't really ever get less chaotic. And I think, honestly, I think it was the de Blasio factor.
Yeah.
Because I think that everyone saw that if you wanted to have your moment in the sun, that you might just have to make it.
Yeah.
And so you saw early people, a lot of crosstalk. And
especially
like,
coming from Kirsten Gillibrand.
She was coming in
fellow
hot.
Fellow New Yorker
but
was
really everybody
came in hot. Yeah.
was. And so much so that probably the first best moment of the night was actually when Harris interrupted them all and said, guys, people don't want to see a food fight. They want to hear about how they can put food on the table. And that got a huge applause. But it was because she had to interrupt everybody shouting at each other.
Yeah. No, I'm crediting New York for all of the most entertaining moments of the debates because it was two New Yorkers who came in hot enough to get this started.
Yeah.
Gillibrand was who came in the hottest in the second night.
Was.
And she's the one who started the crosstalk.
She
crosstalked on the very first question and did not stop for like the entire rest of the debate, basically.
Yeah. I don't know how, I mean, she certainly was able to like get some points across.
It didn't play for her. She didn't do anything for her.
I don't think it did.
No, it didn't do anything for her. That's not the point, though. It was exciting, you know?
It was.
It was exciting, and it gave
us...
It
felt more like a debate night, too.
Yeah, and it's like, listen, this is on fucking television.
Well,
we live in a ratings America. I want to see some fireworks. I don't want to see them... Because here's my least favorite part of both debates.
Yeah.
Was when they were talking about immigration, and specifically, you know, we've been having this controversy about whether or not we can call what are very explicitly concentration camps on the corner concentration camps, and whether we should, I don't know, be separating children from their parents and incarcerating them, essentially.
Right.
And listen... Everyone agrees we shouldn't do that on the Democratic side because no reasonable person would agree that we should do that. But instead, so there was no meaningful debate to be had there. I think we could all just have agreed that we all agreed, except that people kept for like fucking hours, it felt like. People would interject an angry statement about that seemed like they were making a contrasting point to someone else, but was in fact like a copy of a speech that we had just heard from someone else.
Right.
To the extent that I was like, you guys... What if we just had everyone raise their hands for that one? I don't actually need to hear how horrible. We know it's horrible. One person's statement would have been enough. But this is, and I realize that we all want to say that this is a bad thing because it is and we should all be speaking out against it.
Yeah.
But this is our only opportunity to find out what the meaningful policy differences are between you guys in a way where you're all on the stage together.
Yeah.
Do not waste my time with an incensed speech about a thing we're all already incensed about that no one on the stage disagrees about.
Yeah.
I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
I would rather... hear from Marianne Williamson about her plans for calling New Zealand.
Right. I know. Same. Yes.
Kamala's takedown of Biden was the standout moment of the night.
It obviously was.
I mean, she's someone who, you know, she's not super great at giving speeches. She's probably not going to be great at the sort of barnstorming version of running for president, but she's going to be epic in every single debate because she's fucking fearless.
Yeah.
She does not give a fuck.
No.
She came in there, and it's why she's so great in committee. It's why she's really great during hearings because... She comes in and she does not mince words.
Right.
And she she comes in angry and she's not sorry.
Yeah.
And I think there was something really cathartic about that because Biden was doing terribly. Well, and the whole time we were all like, is someone going to say something to him?
That is what I was debating when I was going to go on my,
yeah, it's time.
My Biden rant. And I feel like I'm just going to do it right now.
It's time.
Because Harris has been in the aftermath of this getting a little bit of flack because people felt like it was pre-planned.
Sure.
And newsflash, it was.
Everything in the debate was pre-planned.
Thank you.
No one was even answering any questions.
Right. And not only that, Biden's people, I think, have been, like, today talking about, like, oh, well, it was a misrepresentation of, you know, his actual history on civil rights and this, and she shouldn't have done that, and it was, you know, it was too precocious. It was like, and my response to that is, no, you're a fucking shitty candidate for president.
Yeah.
And you've been, we talked about it on the podcast, you've had your people telling you to stop telling the story about your love of segregationists, because he hasn't just told it once.
No,
he loves to tell it. He loves to tell about the good old days when he could work about the people who wanted to kill all the, you know, N-word.
Right.
You know, like.
Yeah, no.
So this is a thing that he has been up to. It's a favorite story of his.
Mm-hmm.
And people have been telling him to stop, and he hasn't.
He can't.
And if he thought that the person who might be able to eat into his support from African Americans, because make no mistake, the majority of his support is, that's where they're coming from anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the favorite candidate from that, from African Americans by a country mile. And if he thought that that was going to go unnoticed by the black woman on stage, who had already said something in the lead up to the debate about how he shouldn't have said it, the fact that he was so ill-prepared, the fact that he continues to say it on the campaign trail, I have a feeling he'll probably stop now, but just shows, and his response to it on the actual debate stage.
If you
watched that and thought to yourself, that's the best person to take on Donald Trump, then you've got another thing coming. He was the only person who stopped talking because their time was up, by the way, and was like, oh, I guess my time is up. He literally wanted no part of that.
He was desperate to get out of talking.
He did not want to be there. And then he was also a mess for the rest of the night.
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't great up until that point. The man, when they asked people what they would do on their first day after being elected president, he said, defeat Donald Trump. I mean, his brain literally stopped working after this
happened.
Well,
he came across as somebody who thought he was too good to be stuck in this debate with these losers.
Yeah.
He came across as someone who didn't think he needed to prepare. Kamala Harris came across as the sort of type A student who comes in and fucking does her homework.
Yes.
And that people don't want just some guy walking around thinking he's too smart to do the work anymore.
Yes.
We have that right now as a president.
Correct.
It's crazy. He just made he's pretending to have had a last minute meeting with North Korea this week because he was so desperate to look like he's casual. I'm talking about Donald Trump.
Right.
But Joe Biden came across as somebody who didn't even think that the American people were worth it enough and our votes were worth it enough for him to prepare for a major presidential debate.
Yeah.
Because that is why he did not have an answer to this question. This was all the news up until he got into that debate, because he was already into it with Cory Booker.
Right.
He doesn't know how to apologize for things. And like, sorry about it. It's time.
Right.
You got to learn to apologize.
Yep.
Because we are now living in an era where someone who has a record as long as yours,
right,
and especially a centrist record as long as yours, is going to have some things to apologize for. You have to learn how to do that. And he has literally never been able to.
Right.
And then on top of that, his only possible recourse after this moment is to be like, well, that was unfair of
me. Right. Well, and I
tell us why in the moment.
Well, right,
then.
Exactly. Well, and also, here's the thing. I think a lot of people are sort of like, there were two issues that she was coming after him here. And I think that a lot of people were sort of like mad that she was like selling t-shirts the next day that said that girl was me on it.
Because, first of all,
but
that's all we're up to right now.
Well, right. But the thing is, though, I think that she had been planning to come at him for the busing thing, which is what that girl was me line was in regards to. She'd been planning that, I would assume, for months because she has looked into his record. This statement that he has been giving at these fundraisers that he's been doing, talking about working with the segregationists, that's
a happy coincidence.
That, I was going to say, that is a new gift to her that presented itself recently.
Yeah.
So I'm not I'm not mad about the fucking t-shirts because the busing thing we've all known about since the 70s. Well, you know,
exactly.
I mean, like,
that's,
so
then
it's
he
not
doesn't
as
think
if,
he needs to answer for his record at all.
Right, exactly. So that's why I'm just like, no, don't get mad at her for coming at you for that and for telling a t-shirt to raise some money on. Do better with your life.
Just make better choices. Stop running for president.
That's what I just...
He didn't seem like he wanted to be there, and he shouldn't be.
No.
But it was just, it was very cathartic because he wasn't doing well in the debate, and he was saying things like, well, this is personal to me about health insurance, and other things that showed he was out of touch, and it almost felt like no one there was willing to touch him. Like, the debate was very much, there was a lot of lateral attacking going on, but no one was willing to touch him. And listen, it's confusing to touch Bernie Sanders because he's never going to apologize for anything he's ever done because he's been consistent on everything for so long. Yeah. I get why they don't come after him. They call him delusional and whatever, and there's nothing else you can really say because his record shows that he's been consistent on these points forever, even when they've been unpopular. Joe Biden is an open book of things you can attack him on.
Right.
And he's been hiding behind the Obama record. Oh, he also used the line that is my second, aside from saying about health insurance, well, this is personal to me. Anytime that anyone suggests that in instituting a Medicare for All plan, we are somehow abolishing Obamacare.
Oh, I know.
I mean, I gave up on Hillary Clinton because she sent surrogates out to make that point. She didn't even say it herself. And I'm still arguably curious about it.
She sent her daughter to do it.
Yeah. It's the most disingenuous and cynical talking point about healthcare. And he was the only one in the debate who made it. And every time that anyone said anything that was critical of anything that had ever happened, he basically tried to hide behind the Obama record. Newsflash, Obama has not endorsed him because Obama couldn't give a fuck.
Right.
Joe Biden is not in this with Obama. Obama is not going to endorse him because Obama's probably like, what the fuck are you doing, Joe?
Right.
But so like there were just so many moments where I was like, better than this.
Yeah.
But the that brings me to a moment where Kamala Harris should have known better.
Oh.
Unless you're going to...
I know. Well, I was going to make another statement about things that I feel like are so stupid when people, when candidates say it should disqualify them from life. And it was Pete Buttigieg.
Oh.
I cannot stand when... Because he's not for free college. And they got onto that conversation.
Oh, I totally forgot about
that.
And
it's because he used that old line that, again, I think was probably invented by Hillary Clinton as a talking point against Bernie Sanders in 2016.
No, I'll tell you who it was invented by secretly.
Who?
Fucking Ronald Reagan. It's a welfare queen argument.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
It's when he said that, and it always gets applause, too, because people don't think about it. And I'm going to tell you why you should think about it right now.
Good.
He said, I don't want to fund free colleges because I don't think we should be funding free college for children of billionaires. And you know what?
Ooh, that makes me mad.
And you know what? We're only talking about funding college for state schools, state universities.
Right, we're not talking about Harvard.
And you know what? I was going to say, I went to a state school, and I'll tell you how many billionaires' children I went to class with.
Zero.
Do you know why? Because there were zero there. And there are zero at state schools, because that's not where they fucking go. They go to Harvard, where you would still, under the Bernie Sanders plan, have to pay. They go to Yale, you would have to pay.
Yeah.
That's where they go. They go to USC, you would still have to pay. It's so angering because it's disingenuous, and I fucking know that he knows better because he went to Harvard.
Right.
Or so maybe he doesn't know better
because
he probably went to school with a bunch of billionaires' children.
Exactly. Well, and this is the other thing that frustrates me about this
gets me so hot.
It's a welfare queen argument where it suggests that we don't have a social responsibility to certain people because they might misuse it.
Oh, right.
Here's the thing about this argument that college should be free. Billionaires, ostensibly, in a world in which we are being just, also pay taxes. Their kids deserve a free education if they pay taxes, just as anyone does. If they are paying their fair share in taxes, they deserve a free education just like everyone else.
Well, right.
And also, the sort of implication that, like, it's like when I was mad at Hillary Clinton because she endorsed late-term abortions. When you're arguing about where the line is,
she endorsed
banning late-term abortion.
Right.
When you're arguing about where the line is, you're making the wrong argument.
Right.
We provide a free elementary education to the kids of billionaires in this country because it is in our interest to make sure everyone is educated to the level that they can be educated to.
Right.
That doesn't mean that everyone has to go get a college degree, but it means that for a functioning society, we should be able to take whoever are the kids who are going to be best served by that education and give them that education.
Yeah.
That That benefits us. That's for us. It's not for them.
Right.
And so to the idea that we don't owe this to billionaires' kids just as much as we owe it to poor kids, it gives us a reason to think that we're in the business of picking and choosing who deserves a fucking education. And we are not.
Right.
You can be the kid of a billionaire and be estranged from your parents and need a free education, just like anyone can be.
Sure.
You can also be the kid of a poor person who wins the lottery. Anything can happen.
Right. Yes.
But the idea that we don't owe the same benefits to everyone underlies every unjust choice that we make.
Yeah.
And that is true whether or not those people are rich or poor.
Yeah.
And so if you are a person who lives in America and pays your taxes, and
yes.
In the world in which we should be living in, also billionaires should be paying more than we are paying in taxes,
right.
obviously.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you are a person who pays your taxes, you should get all the benefits that people who pay their taxes get.
Yep.
And that includes sending your kid to a public university for free.
Right.
I have no problem with Bill Gates's children
sure.
getting a free education at a public university as long as he is an American citizen who is paying his taxes.
Right.
Or an American resident who is paying his taxes,
right.
whoever he is. But
yeah.
I mean, the argument that we are in the business of deciding who deserves these services makes them sound like giveaways instead of services.
Right.
This is a service. It's
yeah.
a public service.
Yeah.
Everyone should have access to it, just like having a fire
yeah.
department is a public service.
Right.
This is why we provide a free public education
yep.
for everyone. So, like, I don't want to hear some fucking Harvard grad tell
yeah.
me because he went to college. Listen, I went to college with a bunch of billionaires, too.
Sure.
Wasn't great, but I don't think that education should have been free to me. It was a private college.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I went to a fancy college that
yeah.
the education should not have been free. But I, just like everyone, including those billionaires, should have been able to have the choice to go to a public university and go there for free, because that is what public assets are for.
Yep.
They're for everyone.
Yep.
Pete Buttigieg doesn't get to decide who is and is not rich in America.
No.
And we don't either. We get to decide who is and is not taxed, apparently.
Right.
But I mean, like, that argument bothers me because it justifies us discriminating against any kind of person for any reason where we don't think they're deserving of a
right.
service that is supposed
no,
to be a universal service. And
yeah.
that ends up biting poor people in the ass more than it ultimately ends up biting billionaires' kids in
right.
the ass.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was the other point I forgot to mention that I was livid about during that debate. Aside
yeah.
from Cory Booker's point in the first debate about his
right.
health insurance. This was my second debate, Cory Booker health insurance problem.
Right.
Meanwhile, Kamala Harris had a little bit of a stumble the next day when she raised her hand about abolishing private insurance, which we were all very excited about, and then walked it back the next day, as she is famous for doing on
right.
anytime she's asked about healthcare.
She's done this.
She doesn't know anything about healthcare, apparently.
No, you know what? I absolutely think, because she's a person who reads.
Right.
She's a person who can sort of see political wins. She's trying to have it both ways.
Yeah, she is. And you can't.
Because she messed this up once, and I will...
Right, so she already knows better.
I will maybe... And not only that, when pressed on it in this debate, she spoke fairly eloquently
mm-hmm.
as to why insurance companies were terrible. So she did not misunderstand the question,
no.
which is what she said the next morning.
That's right.
She walked it back, and she was... And you know what? I read the wording of the question. It was worded weirdly when
They did that on purpose to confuse everyone. Yeah.
Right. But she had seen the debate the night before.
Wait, they asked the same question.
She understood what she was doing. And if she didn't understand what she was doing, if she would have looked around the room and seen that she was the only person with their hand up other than Bernie Sanders, she would have realized it quite immediately that she had done it wrong.
Right.
If she actually wanted to walk it back.
Yeah.
She could have done it live in the room.
That's right.
Had she wanted to. Because, like, obviously, if you're the
she
only...
She literally went to her immediately. She was the first one who got to speak.
If you're the only one in any room with your hand up at the same time as Bernie Sanders,
right.
and you're the only two, then you probably have to think about what you've just done.
Right.
I mean...
Right.
In a good way or a
we
bad
wouldn't
way.
Have
wherever
we wouldn't have to think
say,
about it.
I would have felt great about it. It would have confirmed that I had done the right thing.
Right.
But for others, maybe like Kamala Harris.
Some of the big money candidates.
So I think she knew exactly what she was doing, and
I
don't particularly care for it.
No.
Actually.
I was disingenuous. And she already was educated on this, because she already made
right,
this
she
mistake
messed it up once.
I'll give
her the first
yeah.
fuck up, although I don't think that she was
tolerating it just so that I can say I don't tolerate the second fuck up.
Exactly. Thank you. Yes.
Meanwhile, here's some other things that happened.
Yeah.
Andrew Yang didn't wear a tie.
Mm, yes.
Marianne Williamson was there.
Oh, man.
Eric Swalwell struck an interesting contrast because he kept trying to sell us on the idea that he was the future.
Right.
But he was dressed like
past
he just
the torch. He was the past the right. torture.
He was dressed like he had just stepped out of a JFK for president event.
Right. His hair
and
wasn't
hadn't changed
moving
his hair.
In a very unnatural way.
He looked like he had come out of the 60s.
Yeah.
He was dressed. It was such a weird choice. So much goes into how they present themselves. Like, Andrew Yang knew he wasn't wearing a tie. Right. Liz Warren knew she was wearing a very exciting purple color.
Right.
Everyone knew what pin they were wearing. Mm-hmm. You know what? Everyone goes through a lot of decisions to wear the right thing on the debate stage.
Yep.
So his hair had to be a choice that he made.
Right.
It couldn't have been that he just woke up that way and was like, I should go to this debate.
Yeah.
They decided to style him like a man from 1962.
Right.
Not just a man, like an FBI agent from 1962.
Oh, that's exactly what he looked like.
Right? No, it's exactly. Totally. He looks like the kind of guy that was in the room when Lee Harvey Oswald got shot and was in the background trying to fade into the back. Like, that was such a weird choice for a guy who was trying to sell us on youth.
Right. I will say, I feel like what he should have done, and he got to it eventually because they did talk about guns in this debate, he's a single-issue candidate on guns, for the most part. I mean, he obviously talked about other things. And he's the person, I think, who gets it the closest to right, too.
Yeah.
Because he wants a federally mandated buyback on these semi-automatic weapons. And, like, I also, even him, it's so weird how these people who are single-issue candidates, like, don't... I was so shocked when Jay Inslee in the first night didn't say that climate change was like the greatest threat to America
as a person,
right? Because Eric Swalwell, while he did sort of like kind of say what his gun plan was, I wish, and he even like questioned other people on it when they were talking about their gun plans, and he was like, but would you do a buyback? Why didn't he explain why we needed to do that mandatory buyback? Because like it's easy to explain. It's because there are too many guns. It's not that people can, yes, we have to fix loopholes and various things like that for people to stop being able to buy
guns
illegal.
But the guns are already out there.
But the guns are already illegal. We've talked about this a million times. We wrote a blog about it.
Right.
That there's, you know, like there's what, like 17 guns for every man, woman, and child in the country. I just made that up. But it's something ridiculous
it's accurate
like that.
It's an alternative fact, but it's accurate in another sense.
Right. So it's
metaphorically accurate.
The point that he is trying to make is that we have to buy those back because the guns are there for people to have. And he didn't make it enough. The same with, I had that problem with, God bless him, Bernie Sanders, when he was asked about whether people were going to have to pay more in taxes. He finally, on the third try, said yes, but then he just looked sheepish about it.
Right.
I don't know why he just doesn't say, yes, you're going to have to pay a little bit more in taxes,
but the amount
that you will save by not having to pay for health insurance premiums will far outweigh the amount that your taxes will go up. I don't know why he just doesn't say that. A lot of people have these issues that I just like... You know, and I'm not a fucking genius. I just don't know why they can't, they just won't, they can't spit their own issues out in a way, especially when you've only got 60 seconds. Explain it to me.
Yeah.
Don't try, I feel like that was a bad moment for Bernie. It was one of the first questions that he got asked, and he just looked like he was trying to bob and weave. And it was like, there is a way to explain
this. Be open about, we all want, we want to like eat the rich at this point. Like no one is saying that you're not anymore in a country where you can't say we're going to raise your taxes.
Right.
I'm ready to raise everyone's taxes.
I know.
Especially on the rich. I'm ready to eat the rich, but I'm ready to raise everyone's taxes if I can get rid of my fucking health insurance premiums.
Right, of course.
I'm happy to.
Yeah.
I'll pay more in taxes. I am not afraid of that talking point.
No.
His voters are definitely not afraid of that talking point. It was weird that he was afraid of it.
Right.
Meanwhile, John Hickenlooper was there.
Oh, sure.
We only know this because security didn't know that he was coming and asked him if he was a member of the press when he tried to get in.
That's like that story that we did a while ago when he was like at some event in Iowa and he was the only candidate that had to wear a name tag.
I know. his problem aside, because he has a very memorable name, but he doesn't have a memorable face.
Mm, no.
He doesn't look like anyone.
No.
A Hickenlooper, a Smith,
yeah.
a guy...
Yeah.
A man named John Doe. It doesn't matter who. He doesn't look like anyone.
Yeah.
And so even if you were to see him every... It's like how Jay Inslee's name was just sort of like escaping my mind for so long, even though he was emailing me daily to tell me he was running for president.
Right.
John Hickenlooper has the face equivalent of Jay Inslee's name.
Yep.
Just like,
uh-huh.
Who is he?
Yeah.
Why was he there? Is he there? Yeah. I'd have no memory of what he did at the debate.
Yeah.
Because the only thing I remember is reading a story the next day about how security tried to block him from getting in.
Right. I feel like And that brings us to sort of another random point.
Right.
Is that one of the things that I feel like was just sort of like a broad takeaway when you put the two nights together is that the candidates who are the best, whether you like them or whether they're even, you know, I obviously have some issues that I don't agree with, specifically with, you know, Kamala Harris,
right,
or Cory Booker or, you know, Julian Castro. But it was clear that after those two nights, the best candidates out of those 20 were women and non-whites.
Yeah, people of color. Very evidently. We came in with the old guard, with a lot of white guys that we couldn't tell the difference between shouting right from the corners.
And even as much as I love Bernie Sanders, he did not have a standout evening. Just in terms of the people who like looked like they were there to do it.
Yeah. No, I feel like Bernie Sanders is almost running in his own primary. Like, I don't even think about him in terms of these
debates.
Meanwhile,
he's still in second place.
So I know, exactly. Like, Bernie Sanders is just like, he's there, he's present, he's always present. We all love Bernie Sanders. He's doing the people's work, so we just let him do it. Yeah. I don't think of him in terms of, like, who won or lost this debate or, you know, who's having a good night. Like, I don't even worry about that.
Yeah.
The most serious candidates who seemed not only like they could beat Donald Trump, but also,
the most
like,
prepared.
They were prepared, were women, Cory Booker, and Julian Castro.
Yep.
And that even goes to women I don't like, because even Amy Klobuchar didn't have a terrible debate.
No, she didn't.
I mean, did she have a great debate in terms of saying talking points that I agree with? No. She did terribly on that count. But she came across well. She came across as prepared. She came across as a professional person.
She came across as a person who was putting all of her putting all of her money in Iowa.
That's right.
Like,
she sure did. The only woman who didn't come across as a real person was Marianne Williamson, and we already knew that.
Right, I was going to say.
But I have noticed a little bit of diminishment of a talking point that I was really sick of hearing, which was, you know, this idea that, oh, it would be great if we could run a woman, but America's just not ready. Because we've been hearing that a lot from people who I think secretly themselves are sexist, but don't want to admit that. So they're just like, we have to vote for Biden because of all these other sexist people.
Well, and are using that as the excuse for why Hillary Clinton won, as opposed to being the garbage candidate.
The most garbage candidate in history.
Right.
But as soon as this debate was over, suddenly everyone was like, what if we had a Warden Harris ticket? And listen, I've been trying to sell everyone on a two-woman ticket.
You wanted it last
for
time.
For years.
Yeah.
I wanted it last time, and I want it again. And I was even, you know, I've been selling people on Tammy Duckworth, a person I don't agree with on anything, because I just think she would be
a great VP.
She's badass and she'd be a great VP candidate. But a Warren Harris ticket would certainly tickle me.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be thrilled with a Warren. But this would be the kind of bold choice that would put us on the offensive.
Yeah.
Having an interesting candidate,
especially against this president. Too.
Against this president. What do we need to do to compete with Donald Trump? We need to have ideas that make people think positive things instead of just being like, I'm so terrified I should hide under a rock, which is what happened last time. And we need good ratings.
Right. Good ratings.
What could be more exciting than the first all-female ticket?
Right.
Especially the first, like, legitimate all-female ticket. Yeah. Like, this is, like, a serious business legitimate matchup. Right. These are real people who could be the president.
Yeah.
Like, I just think it would be so splashy of us. And I'm into us being splashy right now. We need to be splashy.
We got to do something.
We need good ratings, too.
That's right.
And
we got them, by the way.
And we
most
got
them. Most
watched
Democratic debate, I think.
I know, which is wild because they were boring. These were boring debates.
Yeah.
The final takeaway is that there were too many ridiculous lightning rounds.
Oh, my God.
Do not have a lightning round for people who only have prepared talking points.
Yeah, I know.
Half of the stage was not prepared to only have a one-word answer to anything because they only had remembered chunks of dialogue. So they couldn't be asked to just, like, name an important priority. That's why Joe Biden panicked and said that his first plan when he gets into the presidency is to beat Donald Trump.
Right. But I know. It was like, what, in a duel?
Right.
Like, you already,
beat him. He's
you already beat him in the election.
In
like,
this
what,
imaginary
now it's,
scenario.
Right, that was like some sort of, like, celebrity death match or something? Or
it
what?
Was,
like, what?
But, like, it's because these are not people that are prepared for a lightning round.
Right.
They're prepared to give you a speech that's too boring and long.
Joe Biden's people, before he went on stage, said, remember.
Just hit them on the Trump thing.
Right, exactly.
You got to beat Trump.
You're supposed to be the candidate to beat Trump. So any time.
Right, just bring that in.
You can talk about beating Trump. Even if it's a time you've already beat him.
Right. Even if it's a hypothetical situation where the whole premise of the question is that you beat him. That's fine. Mention it again. In any case, a CNN poll that came out today has Biden down 10 points and Harris up 9.
Right.
So.
Well, and that's why, you know, I mean, like, just to go back to that moment once more, and we kind of hit on it a little bit anyway, but I mean, like, of course she was coming for him.
Yeah,
because,
like,
and you know,
plan.
And like, look, I don't want to make broad, I'm only talking about this in terms of just sort of like you know, voting. I'm not trying to make like, you know, broad representations of sort of like how, you know, African Americans vote. But obviously, that's a huge chunk of Biden's support.
Yeah.
She herself is African American. And when you think about it, this was sort of like, this happened kind of in 2008 when Obama was running, because mm-hmm. a lot of people, a lot of the African American community was in it for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And they needed cover to vote for Obama. Because you know what? Look, African Americans have bailed us out many a time because they're fairly smart
voters
broadly. They're consistent voters. They're pragmatic
voters.
They're organized voters. And they want it. They're voters who want to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And so that at the time, you know, like in 2008, they felt like initially doing the right thing was to be behind Hillary Clinton until they realized that there was a better option and he was black. And I feel like that is what Kamala Harris was attempting to give them in this debate. Yeah. So the fact, so of course she was going to do it. And it doesn't surprise me at all that the percentage, I haven't drilled into these numbers. I don't know if they got into sort of like
where this
support came from. But I would, it's not at all surprising to me that the number that Biden went down and the number that Harris went up are almost identical, because I would bet a large chunk of that 10 percentage point that left Biden and went to Harris was probably African-American. That's conjecture. I don't know that to be certain, but I would bet my life on it.
I would go under a firing squad. And
I think that's why. So it's like, another reason why it's so surprising to me that he did not see that coming.
Well, that's
because it's like, obviously she was coming for you.
It was so arrogant of him not to see it coming.
Yeah.
That's where I think these guys lose. That's what Hillary Clinton's problem was too.
Right, yeah.
That's certainly what her problem was in 2008. She was always too fucking arrogant to be prepared for the thing that was actually going to get her.
Right, right.
And that, in this case, this was low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
Of course she was going to go after him for this.
Totally.
She's been plotting for months, sitting around in her, in her lair.
Yes,
just like
I know.
Plotting to go after Joe Biden on this very issue.
Yes.
It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. It's like, I was shocked by how he was not, by how unprepared he was to face that attack.
Yeah.
Now, he probably, because everyone was treating him with kid gloves up until that point, he also probably just, like, didn't think that a female candidate would have the balls to do that.
And it was probably smart of her to wait on it, too, because I think she really caught him off guard. But,
yeah. Well, that's, I think he was shocked anyone had the balls, and specifically that one of the female candidates had the balls. And, like, I think that he is foolish if he thought that, because Kamala Harris doesn't give a fuck.
No.
She'll come after anyone.
Yeah.
That's her thing. That's why she's in this position.
Yeah.
That's what she's good at.
Yep.
She doesn't deliver inspiring and wonderful speeches, you guys. She's not, like, a great performer.
Right. She's going to prosecute you.
She's going to prosecute you. And she prosecuted
him. That's what she did. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. In any case, we also got a bunch of SCOTUS decisions in the last
few
weeks.
Crazy ones, too. We're not going to get into all of them, but there were like 7-2 decisions where the two were like Gorsuch and Ginsburg. It was like weird things were happening.
Yeah.
And like there were two huge decisions that happened on the last day of when they were announcing the rulings this week, one of them being the gerrymandering case and one of them being the citizenship on the census decision. And we're going to tell you a little bit about both of them now.
Right.
The gerrymandering one
went terribly.
However,
along party lines,
a 5-4 ruling, along party lines. But this is, while it was terrible, because I think a lot of people who sort of are, against gerrymandering are like, shit, now what do we do?
Right.
But this can still be dealt with.
Well, I was going to say, we don't have to have gerrymandering
like,
just because
that's what
this
I was
ruling.
Going to say. Like, this isn't sort of like Roe v. Wade, where if they decide that they want to throw that out, then it's just like all these states can basically just like stop, can stop giving abortions, basically. Like, they can sort of like, and then you're like, you're fucked at that point.
Yeah.
This we can still deal with in the sense that like, states can pass their own measures. California passed a measure where this is now dealt with by an independent commission.
Right.
Like,
that's other states have done that. That is what every state could do.
And that's what every state could do. So, like, while this was disappointing that, like, they didn't throw out those maps and be like, start over, you can't be doing partisan gerrymandering, that would have been ideal, obviously. We can still all decide that we're not going to do partisan gerrymandering. And you had a good point that we should make this. This doesn't have to look. This was two states brought this. It was North Carolina and Maryland, and one of them, North Carolina was Democrats saying that it was unconstitutional because they had gerrymandered it to, like, rig it for Republicans. And the Maryland case was the opposite. It was Republicans who said that Democrats had rigged it to get rid of a GOP congressional seat.
Yeah.
So there is not a more nonpartisan issue. And also, you could make it an American issue, too. I mean, we were talking about this earlier. I was like, hello. I mean, this is how Americans are always talking about how they don't like gridlock in Washington. This is how we get it. Partisan gerrymandering is how you get the gridlock in Washington.
Part of the problem we're having here is that this is an issue where there is a clear benefit to Democrats in making it pursuing it as a nonpartisan issue because there are just more Democrats in the country. Having fair representation for Democrats would benefit Democrats without them having to lift a finger.
Right.
But instead, what Democrats do in blue states is they fucking gerrymander the shit out of those states.
Right.
And then,
I mean, if California could go back and decide that they wanted to partisan gerrymander, if we didn't have that independent, we could send an entire state of California representatives being hard left-wing crazies if we wanted to.
But
that doesn't benefit anyone.
No, look at the way that the districts are shaped in New Jersey and New York. New Jersey has had big issues with this. New York State is heavily gerrymandered.
Right, and they're gerrymandered in favor of Democrats.
And then in a deal that was struck with centrist Democrats, New York State got gerrymandered at the state level in favor of Republicans in a state where only 20% of the population is Republican. I mean, crazy stuff is happening. But the problem that we have here is that the sort of mainstream DNC sort of genre Democrats are often up to the shit themselves. We are complicit in this problem.
Well, that's the thing.
We do not have the moral high ground here.
Anybody, when they get in power in a state house, the first thing that they want to get up to is figuring out how they can stay there.
No. And so there's one thing about this ruling is that it says partisan gerrymandering is legal. It has not ruled that racial gerrymandering is legal.
Right.
So there is no... This ruling does not mean that we have to let people disenfranchise black people.
Right.
I mean, it may be interpreted that way by some states, but that's not what this ruling says. This ruling is about whether political parties can decide to gerrymander in their own favor.
Right.
But this is... Democrats fuck up a lot of things when it comes to elections, obviously, because we're the worst at running for everything.
Yeah.
One thing we fuck up is that we do really partisan voter outreach, even though there are more Democrats, and we could just do generic voter outreach because new voters would proportionally come to us.
Yeah.
So we shouldn't be bothering with messages about why you should vote Democratic, overshadowing messages about why you should vote.
Right.
But this is true with gerrymandering as well. We should make gerrymandering the most intractably nonpartisan issue possible because Republicans, you can't be in favor of gerrymandering. You can be in favor of shifting the balance back away from Democrats after they've done it to you or, you know, stuff like that. You can't be in favor of gerrymandering, though.
Right.
So if the issue is gerrymandering and we are unequivocally not doing it, and the issue is about whether or not the will of the American people is going to be represented in their districts or in their, you know, in the way that votes are divided up, that is an issue that we should not allow them to say is a liberal talking point.
Right.
We should not present it as one.
The person who's doing the best work on this, we've said it a million times on this podcast, is Arnold Schwarzenegger, who's a Republican. He sort of is a weird Republican. He probably feels like he doesn't have a place in this
party.
He's
Austrian. It's confusing.
But, I mean, you know, he's the best voice on this subject. And so, I mean, which is good, I think, probably just...
This is not a partisan issue, but Democrats need to remember that it is to their benefit.
Right.
So the more people are Democrats.
Right.
Sorry about it.
Right.
There are in every election, a million or more Democrats vote than Republicans.
Yeah.
There are just more Democrats.
Yeah.
We don't have to play partisan games with an issue like this. We can just decide that we're going to pursue it because it's the right thing to do.
Right.
And secretly, it even benefits us. But we should not let our greed for, you know, more seats overcompensate for our desire to do the right thing.
Yeah.
We could just do the right thing here and know that it will work out for us.
Yeah.
Second thing that happened was that they ruled on the citizenship question for the census.
Right. And
that was weird.
Right. And that was really weird because my boyfriend is working on this through, and I want to get to this in a second, actually, sort of like the work that he's doing on that, because I think it's interesting. And I think the Republicans are going to maybe be remiss that they sort of tried to pull some shit with the census.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it was crazy. This was a 5-4 decision. This was Roberts with the liberals. And basically what they decided was that the Commerce Department does have the right, constitutionally, to put this question on the census.
Right.
But the reason that they gave was so cuckoo bananas
dumb.
Wrong.
It was dumb.
And dumb. And, like, actually not the real reason
or as that Brent they had to the give in court. Utter garbage.
Right. I mean, because they said it was just so they could, like, better uphold the Voting Rights Act, which is, like, as if you're, right, as if you're trying to do that.
Yeah.
Like, let's be honest. Even Roberts knows that you're not trying right. to do that. I mean, hello. He was part of gutting it, by the way.
Right, well, exactly. So right. He doesn't love the Voting Rights Act, but he knows exactly what it is.
Right, exactly. So anyway, so it looks like it's going to not be on there because they were basically like, with the reasons that you gave us, it cannot be on there. And a lot of deadlines are coming up right now. Trump obviously went on a huge tirade and of said that he was going to delay when some of these deadlines were for the census because they literally have to start printing things. They have to start testing things. They have to do all
these things. He basically made it sound like he had the power to delay the census. I just want to point out that that's a constitutional imperative. He doesn't get to decide when the census is. That's in the Constitution.
Yeah.
So
we'll
off.
See what happens. But as it appears right now, it appears as though it's not going to be on there. The Commerce Department, it sounds like they left the door open for the Commerce Department to go back in and give a different reason. But the problem for them is that since the Supreme Court heard this, new information has come out. And it was right. never presented to the Supreme Court because it came out after they heard the case. But I believe we talked about it on the podcast. It was when there was that Republican operative who is now dead. His daughter, like, had some hard drives from his computer or whatever. And he was basically the one who devised putting the citizenship question yeah. on there. And it was openly
to benefit Republicans,
and there were emails and there were discussions about it, and like they were very open about the fact that if they put this on there, it would disenfranchise people from filling it out. There would be an undercount, and it would benefit Republicans.
Yeah.
So the problem is that not only did they not give a good reason the first time around, it has been proven that it was just because they didn't have one. Because the only reason that they actually have is a bad one. So it's going to be hard for them to go back into court and say, oh, look, this was our actual reason, when the opposing side says, no, we know what your actual reason is because we see it. We have proof of what your actual reason is. So it seems as though the Commerce Department is up shit creek, for lack of a better way
to put it. No, I think that's the perfect way to put it. Yeah. That's what they are.
Yeah. But one thing that I want to say just about the census is that if you haven't been... I mentioned that my boyfriend has been working on this. It's sort of like the one thing that it's the thing that he's has a huge like the grant for, like through Equality California, and they're out there. Every single group is out there hitting the census, and it's early, right?
Yeah.
So I could see that. My hope is that because of how, you know, underhanded they were trying to play this whole thing, is that it will backfire in the way that so many things
the Doug have Jones in Alabama effect.
I mean, they are out there. I've been at multiple gay
prides.
Oh, Roy
Moore
is
running for office again.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Forgot
yeah.
about that.
But you know, I've been to multiple prides with them, and they are the one of the main things that they are doing. They always have like they give out free prizes, and they like have you fill out a postcard basically. And the postcard that they're having people fill out is a commitment to fill out the 2020 census, and they are going to text or email everyone to remind them who filled out those cards. They're getting thousands of them.
Yeah.
And this is just one individual nonprofit.
Well, this is, you do
on
not
one
want to empower
weekend.
People to go after something.
And they're
like
explaining
this.
It to why they're explaining why it's important to LGBTQ people because of how funds get allocated. They're explaining it as to because you want as many representatives who are on your side as possible. Like, and this is just one LGBT nonprofit. Other LGBTQ nonprofits are doing the same thing. Other nonprofits for immigrants' rights are doing it. And they're certainly going to be doing it if the citizenship question isn't on there, even though I think they were doing it already anyway.
Yeah.
But like, the left is really hitting the census.
Yeah.
And they would have been hitting it anyway, but the fact that...
Well, it's been openly politicized at this
point. But it's been openly politicized. Yeah. And so now there's like a reason to sort of like really sort of like have this fire in your belly to make sure there isn't an undercount.
Yeah.
And that is on the Republicans.
Yeah. No, they've been doing this... I mean, this is... It's the Roy Moore effect.
Yes, they do it all the time. It's the gay marriage effect.
Right, it's the gay marriage effect. You do it all the... Anytime that you create a panic about something that you could have just not explained to people,
right,
you maybe get what you want in the short term. But this is why I say what they're up to is a really bad long-term strategy. Everyone is suddenly going to be so educated about the census, a thing that is super boring that no one cares about.
I explained the census to people who had no idea what it was this weekend probably 50 times.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. Like,
in the span of 10 hours.
Well, and it's why, like, literally any issue that we're talking about right now that we didn't used to talk about is happening is because someone said it finally.
Right.
You don't want to remind people what they should be mentioning.
Right.
You know, like, if the effect of mentioning that if the effect of reminding everyone that what we have at the border are concentration camps, they're not just holding facilities,
right,
is that everyone becomes super aware of the definition of concentration camp and aware that we are interning people,
right,
like we have done in the past, unfortunately.
Yeah, totally.
Then that becomes a problem for you because then you've reminded people that you're up to something that's a bunch of sneaky shenanigans.
Yeah. Not
and totally. They might have just not paid attention because people are busy.
Yeah.
People, you don't want to make people pay attention to something that they should be too busy to pay attention to.
Right, exactly.
That is where the Trump administration keeps falling apart.
Right.
So, and I feel like also this Supreme Court is confusing.
So confusing.
Because this is, first of all, two wildly different outcomes for, you know, the two sort of most heavily politicized issues that they saw. But also, they also had another case where Kavanaugh joined the liberals.
Yeah.
Just Kavanaugh. They had one case where Ginsburg and Gorsuch were the only people.
They were the two in the
opposition. And right. Then there was another one where Kavanaugh, like, what is happening over there?
I know.
I think they're trying to figure out how to make themselves not irrelevant while still being evil. And they're doing a good job, you know, of that.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. So in any case, here are some other terrible things that happened while we were gone. Because we want to catch you up quickly on the news.
We've been
talking
for a
long time. But
we have.
But we've been gone for a month.
Right.
First things first. Concentration camps.
We've
I mentioned them. We've got them. Liz Cheney doesn't think we have them. She's mad at AOC for saying that. She invoked the Jewish community to claim that AOC was being insensitive. The Jewish community was like, fuck off, lady. These are concentration camps. And that's where we stand. Today, AOC went and visited one of these concentration camps. And here's the thing. Don't be on your worst behavior when AOC is coming to town. Clean up your act.
I know.
Don't.
Yeah, because we're watching.
Because we're watching. Everyone's watching because she's live tweeting it.
Right.
Iran, are we going to war? We don't know. Was the oil tanker explosion that may or may not have been Iran a fake attack or a real attack? We certainly couldn't tell you. We don't know anything about that. We know that it's like...
And they also might have shot down a drone, but maybe it was over international waters, but also maybe it wasn't.
Maybe it wasn't. Maybe we're about to have the Spanish-American War, because that was certainly based on a fake explosion. Maybe we're not. We don't know anything.
Sure.
What we do know is that they have much more low-enriched uranium than they used to, and we can't do anything to stop it because we pulled out of our deal with them. So, awesome.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Climate. Companies, according to the Trump administration, no longer need to consider the long-term climate impacts of their projects.
Oh.
So the world's going to end.
Well, it was going to end in 12 years anyway,
now
so I guess
speed it up.
On some level, there is no reason to worry
exactly.
about what happens after 12
That's
years,
true.
Right?
I mean, fair enough. Impeachment. We're still not doing it.
No.
Nadler's in favor. Pelosi is not. Mueller is going to testify before Congress, which is the new and exciting update.
Yes. Oh, that's right.
This month. I guess his surprise press conference didn't solve any problems. I've also testified in front of Congress.
That's right.
That's just a segue to talk about me. North Korea. Trump did the funniest thing. It's funny for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. He decided that him and Kim Jong-un were going to have a meeting at the DMZ.
Yes.
Essentially, he invited him via Twitter the morning of, or he claims to have,
right.
For this impromptu handshake, and then he briefly walked into North Korea, and then he walked out. He
right.
is insisting and has repeatedly claimed that this was a spur-of-the-moment idea.
Sure.
But it turns out it wasn't.
No, of course
and
it wasn't.
And I just don't understand why he would insist that, like, a piece of very important diplomacy was done without any thought.
Well,
like,
right,
he's
and
insisting...
Also on, and also on Twitter, this is the
that
thing
he
that
didn't
he gets,
think this through.
This is the thing that he gets hit on all the time, even from his own party, where they say, I don't think that he should be doing foreign policy from Twitter.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Like,
but you certainly shouldn't brag about how poorly thought out it was.
Right.
It is better if he makes it seem like it was planned. It is not better to have that happen on the spur of the moment,
right.
but he doesn't seem to agree. So
right.
whatever.
Yeah.
And in final news, Trump is doing an insane 4th of July event that is like my favorite thing that's happening. Because basically, so remember when he saw that military parade in France and he was like, I want one of those. And then they were like, that's too expensive. You can't have that. And he cried like a baby. So he's been looking to put on like an exciting spectacle. So he decided he's going to co-opt the 4th of July fireworks in the National Mall and throw a salute to America.
No.
Fascism style with a boring speech.
A salute to himself is what
he's having. Military flyovers and like a Trump rally atmosphere.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, there's going to be competing 4th of July events in D.C. because the regular 4th of July events are still going on. So the Salute to America is happening at the Lincoln Memorial. But there's also the National Independence Day Parade, which is going down Constitution Avenue. And then a Capitol 4th, which is a concert that PBS puts on that Carole King and Vanessa Williams are in. King has already Instagrammed about how she is not affiliated with the Trump event because she is not trying to be seen there. But so the exciting part of all of this is that there's probably going to be protesters at the 4th of July event, because why wouldn't there be? And we never get to protest on the 4th of July. Right. Usually it just sounds like we're at war, but we don't get to do anything active with that fear. This time, our anxiety can be put into protesting Donald Trump, an American tradition.
Yes.
But basically, he just devised counter-programming to a PBS concert special to just, like, show that he's the boss. It's the most ridiculous thing that's ever happened.
So good.
And I love when he's in his spectacle mode.
I know.
My mother was saying to me while I was home, she was like, I'm getting back into the Donald Trump entertainment factor. Like, for a while, I was too depressed to, like, be into it, but, like, he's so funny. I was just like, yeah, you have to... Like, I know we can't act like it's belittling to the problems to not find him funny. He's very funny. You have to stay sane somehow. And one of the ways I'm staying sane is by finding him funny. The other wisdom I had based on my conversations with my mom was I'm not considering Donald Trump activities as like a bunch of chaotic things that I have to solve individually. I'm conceiving of it all as one problem. Trump is the problem. Yeah. Concentration camps, they're a Donald Trump problem. Going to war with Iran, it's a Donald Trump problem. All of it is one problem.
Who at the debate explained that? Was it Harris?
Did somebody say that?
Yeah, well, they were just basically like, who is the biggest, or what's the biggest national security threat? And somebody in the first night, I think, said Donald Trump. I think it was Bill de Blasio.
Right.
And then somebody in the second night also said it, but they were like, because when you, it was supposed to be a lightning round. So they kept going on, but they were like, but when you think about it, the Iran problem is a Trump problem.
Yeah.
That this problem is a Trump
problem.
No, exactly.
It's all one
problem.
Is
a Trump problem.
If you
and I was like, that's a well
if you think about
said,
it, you
basically.
Feel very powerless if you think about this as like a million things that are coming at you and you have to solve them all individually.
Right.
You can't individually solve the problem of these concentration camps.
Right.
What we can solve is the sort of larger problem,
yeah.
which is that there's a person who thinks it's acceptable to put fucking children in concentration camps.
Right.
That's just as it's of course he's going to try to go to war with Iran. He has nothing going on and he's trying to distract us.
Yeah.
He needs to start a war so that we think he's important.
Yeah.
He's doing the most obvious political playbook things.
Totally.
We could predict what he's going to do on the basis of what the craziest and most cliche, you know, like TV president move would be.
Yeah.
It's wag the dog. It's a fake situation we have going on. So if you think of it as one problem, it's a lot less intractable. It's annoying, certainly.
Yeah.
And it's depressing, but it's not as intractable as thinking about that you're being like assaulted from all sides.
Right.
Because that, I think, is why people are getting tired.
Right.
Which is understandable because everything is such shit.
Right.
And
also he raped somebody, by the way.
Yeah, and he raped somebody. Right. Yeah, we found out. Well, he's raped many people. We have another, the 19th or 18th person that he's raped or assaulted.
Forgot about that.
Yeah, well, she's not his type, Brian. He didn't do it.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But yeah, it's like all of these things are one problem.
Right.
And that's one problem. So we can think about that. We can solve one problem. You can't solve all these. They're specifically trying to make us feel chaos so that we feel like we're overpowered.
Yeah, totally.
We're not.
No.
It's one problem.
Yeah.
So stay strong, everyone. Happy 4th of July.
Yes.
We'll be back next week.
Yes.
Because
we will be.
We're now like in the season. Like this is our season.
Sure.
Now that the debates have started, we're like in it.
Yeah.
So we're not going to be fucking around the way that we've been. This is where we shine. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.